This podcast is proudly brought to you by Infinity Media, incubating innovative businesses in the media industry.
Hi, I'm Gordon Muller. I'm the guru in the Doc and Guru podcast. Thanks for being with us. For those of you who don't know me, I've spent over 40 years in the media industry in South Africa and pretty much made it my home, my life, my passion. I have other passions, unfortunately, for my sins. I'm an Arsenal supporter and a Sharks supporter, so we're going to do pretty much everything on the show as it pertains to media, marketing, and money, but we don't take jokes about Arsenal or the Sharks.
I'm Doug Mateus, the doc on the show. And again, for those of you who don't know me, I spent 30 years in various companies in South Africa running different marketing functions. And the last job I had, I was privileged enough to work with a team that took the brand to the fastest growing brand in South Africa in 2018 with a 47% year-on-year growth. So that was a great achievement for the team, and I'm really proud of that. From a personal point of view, I do a little bit of cycling and also snow skiing, so we quite enjoy that. But again, today's discussion is around all things marketing and media.
Yep, that's right, Doc. All things marketing and media. No subject too big, no topic too small, no subject too hot to handle. Please get in touch with us on our Facebook page, follow us, like us, whatever it takes. We would love you to be involved with the show, and we really want to make it as inclusive and as energetic as I know this industry is capable of. And welcome to the Doc and Guru podcast to all our listeners out there. It's a very special week, so a particularly warm welcome to all our Orlando Pirates supporters who are, you know, most of them actually not leaving their homes. They're all working from home this week after the weekend's results. Or is that sulking from home? I'm not quite sure. I'll have to double check. But welcome to the Pirates supporters, and that'll teach you to come off your goal line, and not keep your eye on the ball. But we've got, keeping our eye on the ball, we've got two of really important people in our lives right now. It's Lynn Krog, Senior Research Strategist from Spark Media, or in association with Spark Media rather than from Spark Media, I think, because you're London-based now. Lynn, we're going to introduce in a moment. And Kamohelo Apane. Kamo, you're Corporate Affairs Manager at Spark. So welcome to the two of you. You look particularly well for a team that's taken the roadshow for the launch of Routes 8 around the country. You look relaxed and well. I presume it's gone well. Come on.
Thanks, Gordon. Well, I actually happen to be one of those Orlando Pirates supporters.
Well, in studio, I never.
I did not hide away. I am out of my bubble and shamelessly walking around in the streets.
Well done on you. Well done on you. Nothing wrong with walking shamelessly. I've been an Arsenal supporter for many years. I understand the walk of shame better than many, many people.
And I'm a Liverpool supporter, so I'm currently
indeed
doing the walk
so
of shame.
Indeed, so you. So we're a bunch of – well, actually, I'm not. I'm not a misery this time around. I'm happy. I had a marvelous football weekend, and I'm looking forward to the World Cup, so that's really going to be exciting. But come on, just before we get going on Routes, which many of us do know in the industry, just take us through a little bit of the background and the relationship between Spark Media, Caxton, the CTP Group. How does it all come together, and then we'll talk about where Roots fits into that equation.
So Spark Media is basically the sales and marketing side elements of the Caxton Group. We represent 119 local papers, and we basically house the sales team as well as our marketing team and the ad ops team, who are the key players in the actual advertising taking place in any of our local newspapers. So all the hard work happens at Spark Media. We generate the money and, yeah, goes through to Caxton. We are a print solutions-based organization and have a reach of 3.9 million people on a weekly basis. Yeah. So it's absolutely huge. I'm still amazed by it. And the most beautiful thing, or what I take away from Caxton, is even during COVID, they were able to deliver and get inside every single home. So they deliver at your door, whether you're in closed-off estates, and that's something that we picked up in the Roots research that Lynn will give you a background of, that it's just amazing. It's incredible the reach that local newspapers have, and how so many people, or the community, is just always just itching to find out what stories are being shared. Are they going to be in the newspaper? Will their pictures be featured in there? Will their stories be pictured there? I mean, featured there. But really, our core business is speaking to our community and speaking to our people. So as much as we have clients that advertise in our papers, but our core or fundamental part is to always remember South Africans and remember not just we don't see them as consumers, but more as humans, as people, and really communicating well with them. And that's exactly what our papers do. So we are basically a non-biased organization in terms of we let you share your stories as a community. We are your mouthpiece to share with your various communities or local areas of what's happening. Is there a church opening or what's the latest sale at Pick and Pay? Or is there a grand rugby event in your nearest place? But it's just really that's what keeps us together. And Spark Meet is exactly that. When I walked into Spark Meet about 7 months ago, the one thing I felt and still do feel is the sense of family. So as much as the business itself represents local people and local papers, but you'll be amazed at how the actual structure itself does exactly that, even in the businesses. So as staff members, we literally speak and feel like family members. I found a home at Spark Media. And yes, of course, we fight, but don't all families fight? We have our siblings, we have our mothers, we have our aunts, but it's the sense of community that's within that business. And I think that's the secret behind Caxton still running so well and doing incredibly well the way that they do, because internally they have that sense of community and sense of home in their business.
Yeah, look, I think it's amazing if I reflect back over the years on Caxton's, you know, from the very, very beginning, a handful of papers. I think the first one might have been Randburg, if I'm not mistaken, but to see now that in many respects the Caxton paper is last man standing, which is quite remarkable and a testimony to the importance of community. And on the podcast, we've been very, very vociferous about it. Or I certainly have, the importance of community media, whether it's newspapers or radio, going into an election now. It's absolutely critical to have that ground, sort of groundswell of communication and a narrative controlled by communities, which is crucial. But Lynn, welcome to the studio. Thanks for making the time. And am I right? You're based in London now?
No, I started my research career in London.
Okay.
And I hold a British passport.
Ah, I'm confused about that.
But no, I'm working. I did consult for a while to Caxton, but now I'm back there working.
So. Okay, you're back. That's where I lost the plot, because you were consulting for a while and now you're back in driving the bus.
Do you know what? This latest roots research was such an evolution compared to the prior roots research.
Yes.
That it was important that I was actually back full time rather than simply consulting. So,
And look, not to make you feel too kind of proud of yourself, but I mean, a number of people commented on how nice it was to have a research minded person presenting research. So, congratulations, it went down extremely well.
Thank you.
I went to the presentation up here in Johannesburg at, come and help me out here, is it the Trist? It was a fabulous venue.
The Trist, they are actually based in Woodmead. Really incredible people. The owner of this business, Mark Sham, he would hate if anyone would say he's a motivational speaker. But Mark literally just feeds into your mind. And he's so big on encouraging to have a positive mindset and well-being. And he started this business, I think, 2020. It was during COVID, and they're doing incredibly well. Yeah. He hosts a lot of SMME talks. He does this incredible happiness workshop that our team attended. But I would say anyone out there, Google the Trist, research Mark Sham, and make a booking with his team, because it's definitely worth it.
We're unashamedly commercial, and when you've had a good experience, this is the right place to promote it. I really enjoyed it as a venue.
Yeah, that's good.
Great. Kind of natural kind of rhythm and flow to the venue. But all right, enough of that. But talking about happiness and life coaches and motivational speakers, your baby, the roots, I mean, I was trying in my mind to piece it all together, and I remembered RDL, which I think was Retail Dart and Library. Then there was ART, which was the Actionable Regional Retail, and I can't for the life of me then chirps.
Yep.
So when did it become Roots, and how long have we been on the Roots formula? Just give us a bit of a background, and where are we now? And with all of this, I mean, I'm going back, I guess, 25, 30 years in that narrative. Yeah. How come Roots is still such an important part of the mix?
Yeah, it's fascinating. I mean, obviously, Roots, I've been involved in Roots since about 2005, which obviously ages me. So Camo was saying it's a family. I'm by far the grandmother, but a researcher as well. So I started working with the Roots research in 2005. And that was the beginning of a step change for Roots as well, because they were moving to Kantar as their research provider, or research surveys as it was then. And it was done by research surveys all the way up until this current one. Every 3 years, Roots was repeated. And you ask Gordon, why does Caxton have to invest in their own currency research? And the reason is that no other currency out there measures local community newspapers. So we have to do it ourselves, because it's very, very much footprint or geographically confined. So you need to be able to go in and research a very specific geographical area to get the readership of the paper. So we've said, I mean, we've got 115 titles across the whole of South Africa that we sell on. So we need to be able to show the correct footprint or the correct title to the correct person who's living within the correct footprint, if that makes sense. So that's never been able to be done by the other landscape surveys that are out there, unfortunately.
Yeah.
They give you the big picture, but they don't give you the picture of what I like to call local South Africa, which is everybody who has access to a local community paper.
Yeah.
And there is this perception out there that print is dying, and national news is so readily available online and digitally, and lots of people can engage with national news as it happens. So the idea is the necessity for the newspaper isn't there anymore for national news. And local newspapers tend to get lumped in with that. But the truth of the matter is that local newspapers are a very different animal, because they supply local news and they supply everything to do with that local geographic area, which isn't really readily available anywhere else. You try to do it digitally, and we do it very successfully digitally, but there's something about seeing your face on a newspaper seeing your face in print that is very, very compelling to people. I like to think of it as all this digital stuff. It's very fleeting, and you feel like it's up there somewhere. So if you don't like the look of yourself there, you can just think, oh, nobody's going to see it. Whereas in print, it's like it's permanent. It's there.
No, I think it's the old ink. It's the impact of ink on fingers. You know, I think there's a certain gravitas.
There is.
You know, even with things like textbooks, you know, you want to feel it. I mean, you're either a sort of an online reader or you're a book reader. Yeah. You know, I mean, I've tried Kindle, and it was very functional when I was traveling, but there was no substitute for the look, the feel, the smell, the texture of the whole thing. But, I mean, I get it. Roots is a currency survey.
Mm.
But that's quite limiting to think of it only in terms of a currency. I mean, it's actually so much more. It's an incredibly rich database within which currencies are located.
Absolutely. So what we have to measure our currency, and we have to measure it geographically. This current Roots is 97 independently sampled, geographically defined areas across the whole of South Africa. While we're out there collecting the currency, we collect a whole bunch of other questions that are going to be relevant not only to our advertisers, but to any business that's trying to do business at a micro level, which is actually all business. Because once you understand your strategy at the micro level and you build from there upwards, that's how you overcome your competition. But you have to be flexible and you have to be agile. But the start comes from actually understanding who am I actually competing with in four ways compared to who am I competing with in Deep Kloof and Soweto. And there can be two very different sets of people with different economic means, with different set of competitors. So you need to understand it. So the questionnaire opens up as many business categories as we possibly can. If your actual category is not there, you've got the demographics to fall back on. And that data is given back to our advertising community, given back to our non-advertising community, because the idea is, you know what, if you have something to help you, Mr. Businessman, to grow your business, ultimately you will come back to the community newspapers because they do deliver the biggest local, geographically confined audience.
Yeah.
And an audience that is paying attention to the advertising that's in the medium.
Yeah.
And that's something which is, you're talking about books and reading books. There's something very compelling about comparing product and price in a printed format in front of you.
Okay.
Because you can lay them all out in front of you and you can compare. So just before I did the launch presentation in Cape Town, it was quite fascinating. There was the tech guy who was helping me set up, and he was asking me questions saying, what are you going to be presenting about and what's this all about? So I explained to him and I said to him, what newspaper do you get? And it was Table Talk up in the Cape. And then he said, yes, actually, I know exactly what you're talking about, because what happens is that we get it delivered on a Thursday, and then my wife and I sit and we lay all the advertising out, and I get my cell phone and we take photographs of all the different product offerings, and then we put them into files. And then on Saturday we go shopping, and we start at the one end of the street and we walk to the other end of the street, and then we open up and see where we need to go shop. So it's a tech savvy person. There's something that's difficult about searching product and price and comparing using a digital for a laptop or a phone.
Oh, you try and screen save and sort of put them in a file somewhere, but it's not quite the same.
Tricky.
Yeah, it's tricky.
So that's why print works as an advertising carrier. Yeah. Okay, and that's part of what we discovered in the Roots research this time, because we asked a lot of questions about the shopping journey, which was very important for us to understand. And it's always been a theory before, but we've never measured it. So that's important. But then there's also like such fascinating information. For example, in my consulting years, I also did a lot of work in the health field. So I'm sort of a personal nutrition, and I've done my master's in that. So I went and studied and then came back to research at the end of the day. But when you have a look at the health space and you start to see what it is that people are suffering with, like chronic conditions that are out there, never mind about how many people have been vaccinated and how many people have had COVID, and we've got that information by area, but just what people are currently suffering with. And headaches is always way up there, but anxiety has just shot up. Since the last time we did Roots, it's actually fascinating how many people are suffering with anxiety. So we know that people are talking about it, but to be able to measure that information and measure it by a four-ways, which is, it's very high, compared to a Mamelodi, where it's actually not as high. And you sort of think, well, probably Mamelodi's got more to worry about than four-ways, but actually, maybe not. So, there's such a lot of information.
There is indeed. I mean, you're talking about anxiety. You've talked about being in Cape Town, where the tech guy asked you questions. I actually wake up screaming at night at the prospect of being asked questions by the tech guy, but that's a different kind of Luddite response, I think, to technology. But speaking of Luddites as well, I mean, take me through some of the sort of the background on the technical aspects of it. But you made a comment at the launch, which kind of resonated with me, that from a technical perspective, been a lot of big changes in the research methodology, and it's an evolution, I think you phrased it, in the way we ask the questions, not an evolution in the questions themselves. So whilst you're probing a whole bunch of new stuff, like anxiety in a post-COVID pandemic society, a lot of the old stuff is there, so I can get a sense of the movement as well.
You're listening to The Doc and the Guru, proudly brought to you by Infinity Media.
Absolutely. You know, previously, Roots has always been done on a pure random sample drawn from a specific geographic area. That pure random sample is households, and interviewers are sent to the household and a face-to-face interview is done. There was no ways going into the research this year that we could use that methodology, because I don't believe that A, you can get into the homes, B, spend an hour face to face with a respondent, and C, get truthful answers from them, just because our world is very different now compared to previously. So we, even before 2019, we were looking at ways that we could move forward with the way we ask the questions. Now, do you know what? There's the questions in research are good. The questions have been used for years and years and years and years. There's no need to change the questions. What needs to change is how you engage with the consumer. You need to engage with them in a way that is easy for them to answer. They don't feel like irritated because you're taking up their time, and they're going to answer truthfully. So the way forward for engaging with people, we believe, is online panels.
Yeah.
So we engaged with Borderless Access 2019, even, just to say to them, listen, this is what Roots is about. Does your panel of consumers have the capability to actually do this type of research, this magnitude of interviews at a geographic level? And it was a bit of a journey. So we started it in 2019, and there were talks and negotiations and all the rest. And then obviously COVID hit. And after COVID, there was absolutely no ways that we were going to be able to do face-to-face interviews for a whole 23,000 sample. So we said, well, we have to be brave, and we have to measure local community print using an online consumer panel, which, and within a geographically defined area, which, if you actually think about the logistics of it, is quite a big scary thing to do for a print operator, a local print operator. So we did we said, but this is the way ahead. We looked at a number of different proposals, and that we took Borderless Access eventually as the best approach. And we did a pilot for the first 10,000 interviews, and we're happy with what we were seeing. And what's really key is that we can compare our results now with the previous routes. You're expecting to see a bit of fluctuation because things have changed. But if the data had been completely out of the ballpark, then we would have been able to say, okay, this isn't working, because they're not able to get a random sample within an area.
Yes.
But we could compare every single area. And I was so encouraged by how quickly a lot of the areas filled up and completed, and how – so the way that – getting technical here, but the way that – we controlled, not controlled, but made sure that the sample was properly spread, was by knowing how many interviews we should be getting by suburb.
Yes.
And then if that spread wasn't happening, then we knew that you were getting all the interviews in one little area or one little pocket. But I was so encouraged by the areas where that you were getting an absolutely proper spread of suburbs. And there were some near the end where it wasn't the case. And what we did then was we supplemented the interviews with some face-to-face interviews.
I was going to ask about substitution. I mean, in the old face-to-face, there were rules of substitution. 2 hours is left, one to the right or whatever. Does that kind of stuff take place? And how do you control that?
You can't control for it. But
so
then
you just do a random number generator within a geospace or something
absolutely.
Like that?
Absolutely. I mean, it's like... You can try and control for that pure random face-to-face in-house interview, but just the logistics of an interviewer that's not getting paid a lot of money, that has to knock on a door and get into a house and get in front. I can't tell you our last routes how many phone calls the local community newspaper branch got saying, there's people here who are pretending to be interviewers. Can we trust them? Interviewers who had dogs set on them. Interviewers who... It's just a very, very tough thing to do. And so sorry, but I don't believe that interviewers who are not getting paid a lot of money are going to persevere for hours and hours to get those interviews.
And you know, to follow the guidelines on substitution perfectly, it's just unrealistic in the modern world to anticipate that. I mean, you know, obviously recently we had the launch of the Fusion study as well. So PRC, Reed has got an online panel now. You've got Cathy on RAM. So I think that's just a reality of where we are. And in sort of getting involved with the Fusion study, and I come back to a comment you made earlier in that respect, for me, what is important is that we recognize it's a global best practice. I mean, Australia went online in 2006. New Zealand went 50-50 online and face-to-face in 2016. And in 2020, they went online. So, I mean, around the world, this is a simple reality. We live in a data-driven world. Absolutely. But, I mean, one of the key things, obviously, you know, the benefits to you and then ultimately to me is the cost-saving implication of it. Because we've been chatting about this quite a lot on the show and recently as part of the Fusion rollout. For me, we talk about industry transformation, but you cannot transform from the top down. It has to be bottom up. So if you're going to create an industry where open source data is not available, it's only the blue chips that can afford it. You cannot get a bottom up approach. So between Roots and the Fusion study, collectively, as an independent, you know, who doesn't work on blue chip clients, I'm in the game. Without those two studies, I'm not even in the game. I don't even get in the door, let alone get a chance to do my work. So, I mean, I think controlling costs and turning that into open source access is vital to transforming the industry from the bottom up.
Absolutely.
So even to add on to that, something that we are actually actively going to do with the Roots research is to invest in your small, medium enterprises and actually give them access to the Roots data. Because as someone who has a small business, to get the results of this, like this, the magnitude is huge. And to get access to all of this would be so costly. But our way to also give back to the community is actually making this accessible to small businesses. And that's something we're committing to do in the next year. And potentially even partnering with Mark Sham for his small business hub sessions that he has to allow small businesses to really fully understand what is Fourways thinking, because they are more micro-driven versus a retailer, which would be, you know, on a macro perspective. But for them, this is so valuable. And I'll keep touching into this of saying, I'm always in awe of the nature of how much the Caxton Group does for its people. And maybe you actually don't know that the business was actually started by two teachers.
I do. I know the two teachers well. So I do indeed know that. But, you know, coming back, so I think if I'm right in saying your average, well, not your average, but the kind of regional sample size per community is something of the order of 300, which is not a small sample in research terms. That's a lot. And, you know, to come back to your point on whether you can use that at a local level, I had occasion with Roots 2019. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we haven't had the new data yet. Mm-hmm. I must ask you when that comes out. And I was able to do for a small business at Eastgate versus the equivalent at Bedford Square and was quite remarkable how granular you could get. And I think, is the sample a bit bigger now or of the same magnitude?
Still the same.
So you might be able to maintain the sample. Yeah. Okay.
Maintain the sample. So our key areas, it's 300. We also we research the Western Cape, even though we don't actually have titles there. It's adds 24 titles, but we're still obviously offering a national picture. So we actually have a bigger Cape Town sample this time in terms of the number of areas that have been covered. So you can get down, you need to be able to get down to granular level, and 300 is a good sample size per area for us to be able to look at to look at the data. But also back to what Cam was saying, you know, we have a local sales team that takes out this data to all the local independent businesses, and then Spark Media takes it out to all the national players. And data, in my mind, is only valuable if people use it. So that's why open source data is so important. You know, you can actually hold it tight and use it, but this form of data, this is a give back, and it's for people to use. And often people think there's a catch, but there isn't catch.
There's always a catch. I mean, you know, but the catch doesn't necessarily imply that you know, that there's some erosion of the quality of the data. Yeah. I tell you where the catch is, and I think this is where you as researchers have hoist, you know, yourselves on your own petard. It's the tyranny of the 95% level of probability. Elon Musk has to work at the 95% level of probability because he wants his rocket to land on a ship in the middle of the Pacific. I get that. If I go to my client and offer them a 90% probability that they'll get a result in their campaign, most clients will be extremely happy. And I'm intrigued. If, when you drop the 90%, you know, the 95 to the 90% probability, then 300 looks like a very big sample. And I just wonder, are we disappearing down the 95% probability rabbit hole when we're just making lateral, horizontal, tactical decisions?
Yeah. We probably are. I mean, yes, the bigger the sample, the better. And I'd say going from 300 to 1,000 is just a waste of money because at the end of the day, research is only as good as the questions that are being asked, and also it has to be interpreted, and it has to, you have to have common sense coming into it, and you always go back to the question when something's not looking, and that will have a bigger impact on what you're seeing than what probability you're putting on. Certain things, yes, you've got to have high probabilities, but other things, no, it's a map. It's just giving you a bit of guidance. You know, you've got to still use your common sense, but at least it's giving you the option to decide between an example that I used in the launch. You know, if you a pet food manufacturer who wants, or pet, if you're going into the pet business and you're wanting to sell pet food at a specialist store, the size of your market is X. So we can tell you by area the size of your market. But also a really key thing that I found out when I was doing that analysis was those people who go to those pet shops want to go to strip malls. They don't want to go to big malls.
Yeah,
I think that's really important.
Yeah,
and just that's giving you at least a bit of a basis to work from when you're making a big decision, and that's, you know, that's
that's why I think that kind of, I mean, location, fundamental principle of retail, which is why, you know, I loop back and said, you know, roots are so much more than a currency survey, because if I can extract that kind of information, it's really, really worthwhile. But just looping back to some of the findings, you know, from the study, there were some interesting things. You've alluded to one of them, which was, you know, looking for deals. And, you know, your example there of your colleague in Cape Town, people might be mistakenly thinking, well, that's a sample of one. But the whole thing of looking for deals, looking for value, was an intriguing post-COVID phenomenon, I think, that you unpacked.
Yeah, there's a lot of data out there, and there's a lot of a lot out there just showing that people are struggling financially at the moment. All the indicators are there. And as an upshot of that, everybody everywhere is looking for deals. They're struggling financially, but also people have been conditioned to look for deals. You go to Woolies now, and you look at the end of the row, because you'll see what is their special for dinner tonight. What's their two for the price of one, or two for three for the price of two deal, because you've been conditioned to know that those things are coming. And people aren't stupid. They learn. And there's habit involved. So that habit has been developed very nicely by everybody offering specials all the time. Like, we're going into Black Friday. I mean, everybody's going to be doing their shopping over the next month, because they've learned over the last few years that this is when you're going to get the deals happening. So because of that, everybody everywhere is looking for deals. Also, because of all of the different things that are available to them, they know where to go and look. So the paper is a place that they look for product and price. Online is a place that they go and look for brand reviews. I want to buy a toaster. What are the best toasters of 2022? They're going to look there. That's going to take them into an online store like a Takealot, and they can do a bit of a comparison there. But then at the end of the day, they're going to go in store, and they're going to check what's available in store and touch and feel it to make sure it's what they want. So there's all these touch points along the shopper journey that are incredibly important. And it's the same across every single area, whether you are a wealthy area. And I was actually just looking at the data today. Our wealthiest area is Fourways, huh? I didn't realize that. Yeah, anyway. Our wealthiest area on Roots this time around in terms of monthly household income is Fourways.
Okay, that's intriguing. Just, you know, also, while we're at it, what on earth is going on in Pietermaritzburg, or Pietermaritzburg as it was formerly known? I mean, there was an intriguing set of sort of interconnecting data from that part of the world. What was the story there again?
I think...
Was it alcohol consumption? Was like
I think because people have had alcohol taken away from them during COVID, they are now puzzering even more, and Pietermaritzburg the highest concentration of pusserers in terms of the number of people and the amount of alcohol that they're drinking. So,
yeah, well, I mean, at the end of the day. So, I mean, just coming back to the deal thing, I mean, and bringing it back to currency, which I guess is important. That obviously, the currency figure is there, the trading figure is there. For those who want to balance it out, you've still got circulation figures and all that. Absolutely. So, I mean, you know, this is a very safe space to operate from as a media procurement person. Yeah. You've got both sides of the coin. But one of the things which I think would probably have emerged from Roots, because we haven't had the data yet, is the role of loose inserts again. I mean, you know, that's well, I look at them and think, not for me right now. But when I'm in the mood, then they are for me right now. And that's it's all about timing, isn't it?
All about timing. You know, there's people in the market for what you're selling every week or every day. You can't predict when your stove's going to break or your toaster's going to break or your... So there's people in the market all the time. Yeah. And if you want to sell to as many of those people as you can, you actually have to be nudging them continuously.
Yeah.
So like you've just said, you know, those inserts provide... Yeah. Advertising that gets attention, and it's a place where a decision is made in terms of what price am I going to pay and what retailer am I going to go to. I've already gone online and decided I want the Smeg toaster, but who's actually offering it and what price are they giving me? And I'm going to go through those catalogs and look and say, okay, Hersh's is probably a good bet for me because that looks like the best price.
Yeah.
And that's going to determine where you go.
Yeah.
And that's something that you're spending a bit more money on.
Yeah.
But that is happening for your food and groceries. Mm. So you talk. Most people do a bulk food and grocery shop, but they don't necessarily only go to one place. Mm. They do it all on the same day at the end of the month or in the middle of the month. But like I said, my guy, my Cape Town guy, they go and get those things there, they go and get those things there, and they go and get those things there.
Yeah.
So it's spread across the three big retailers that happen to be close to each other and convenient for them to get to.
Yes.
Which is... I found that very fascinating because I didn't realize. I thought, okay, Pick and Pay is probably getting the main bulk shop, but no, a third.
Yeah, look, that whole retail dynamic has shifted with, you know, Checkers in the 60-60. The whole dynamic is really a fascinating case study in and of itself. But, yeah, I guess we come into the wrap-up time, and, of course, we're missing the Doc. He's still working hard in Cape Town. Well done, Doc. Just bring the money home. Bring the bread home for the rest of the family. Pleased to see you out there earning a living. Where can we or when can we expect this to be dumped onto Telma and Clear Decisions?
The data is currently already on Telma.
Okay,
if you just drop us an email, then we'll give you
access. So, and we can do that through, I mean, the Spark. What's the website page there?
So the website is www.sparkmedia.co.za.
Yeah.
And we actually are launching a new website, which we're super excited about.
Okay.
And that'll probably be in the next week. And all the summarized information will be there.
Okay, so give it a few days to settle, and it'll all be up there. We can go to the website, and we can access whatever we need. So, guys, thanks once again. I think, you know, on behalf of all the independent freelancers and people like the Abstract Club, you know, that's the biggest single grouping of freelancers in the country. To yourselves, Caxton, Spark Media, Roots team. And, you know, if I'm going to steal some of your show, if I may, to the Fusion team, BRC, PRC, and everybody. Guys, you know, without open source, we're out of the game. There's no transformation from the bottom up without data. So between Roots and Fusion, I'm looking forward to getting my head down the next few weeks and playing with the stuff. Yeah,
I was at PAMRO last week.
Oh, yes.
And
how did it go?
Very, very exciting. And so exciting to see some of the work the BRC is doing with the radio measurement stuff that's going to be coming out next year. Very exciting. It's such an interesting space at the moment because media is so fragmented. How do you plan on it? It's just, and, you know, we were all so spoilt when we had amps. We just had one single source, but that doesn't work anymore because the environment has changed such a lot. But there's such exciting developments coming up. I just wish, as an industry, we could all just come together and have one thing that measured everything.
Look, and
wouldn't it be exciting?
And I think in the fullness of time, let's hope that we start, working together towards that end objective. But, you know, the expectation that all of those things I think Linda Stone was talking about the principle of continuous partial attention in 1996. Okay. You know, this is not a new phenomenon. Yeah. I mean, and, you know, what does continuous partial attention mean? It means you are continuously paying attention, but only partially.
Very partially
at best. Mm. So the expectation that one person can be a perfect mirror of all of those behavior patterns is unrealistic. But fusion and all the clever things you guys do, you know, going forward can bring it back. Mm. I just want one point of access. I don't need one point of research. Yeah. I need a point of access, which I think is what it's all about. So,
Sorry, just to close off.
No, you're very welcome.
Just if anyone's looking to directly communicate with us, so besides looking on the website, you can pop us an email at info@sparkmedia.co.za, or you can search for us on Facebook and LinkedIn, Spark Media SA. And we will help you. Literally just a message away.
Yeah, and I think also if I can just throw in there, because you can get the launch on YouTube. I think there's a YouTube clip. So if you want to actually go through the whole launch, which I would recommend the listeners do, go and actually have a view of the launch before you play with the data. It'll give you the sort of helicopter drone perspective. Yeah. All right, guys. Well, Lynn,
thank you.
Kamo, thanks so much for joining us today. And Doc, be missing you here. And I need you back here working because I'm taking off the back end of November for World Cup. So I have no intention of doing any work when the World Cup's on, Doc. This is going to be your show for a month. Guys, to all the listeners, thanks for joining us. Lynn, Kamo, thanks for coming.
Thank you so much for having us.
Let's keep talking.
And so that was another episode of the Doc and the Guru. Please don't forget to get a hold of us on Facebook, like us, follow us, subscribe to the podcast. And then from my side, you can get a hold of me on LinkedIn, Dr. Doug Mataz. I'm very active and very keen to hear about your views and certainly will respond. And hopefully we can bring that into the show.
Thanks, Doc. And it's Gordon Miller, the Guru, signing off. Thank you for being with us and listening into this podcast today. You can pick up the discussion with me on my Twitter handle, @MzanziMedia. And I'd love to engage with you on any of the issues that we've taken on the show. And take us at our word. This is really going to be an open forum. There are no subjects that are taboo. And we'd love to have some of the younger, more under-listened, if that's the correct phrase, voices to join us in this discussion. Thanks for your time.
The Doc and the Guru, proudly brought to you by Infinity Media, incubating innovative businesses in the media industry.